It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Shoe prints left at a crime scene can be key evidence for investigators trying to piece together what happened. And for shoe print evidence, having a large database of footwear impressions is essential. This allows investigators to zero in on what type of shoe they're looking at, sometimes down to the exact brand and style. Now, students at UW-Platteville are teaming up with the Wisconsin State Crime Lab to provide new reference prints of boots, sneakers, and other footwear for the state database. Jana Marie Truesdell is an assistant professor of criminal justice and forensic investigation at UW-Platteville, and Danielle Beyer is a sophomore and president of the Forensic Investigation Club on campus. Jana Marie and Danielle, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
Jana Marie, starting with you, take us to the scene of a crime, if you will. How do shoe prints come into play when investigators arrive at the scene and then start gathering evidence?
Well, it's part of impression evidence. So the footprints would maybe give us directionality where a perpetrator may have entered the scene, how they may have left the scene, what kind of shoes they were wearing, if they were boots, if they were tennis shoes, if they had any sort of unique impressions, then we might be able to exclude certain shoes. We don't say that specific things are perfect matches, but we can certainly exclude things that don't obviously match. So that sort of winnows down who we might be looking for, or at least the shoes that you're looking for.
The shoes that you're looking for. I mean, when you're looking at this shoe print, how do you determine things like the style or the size of a shoe?
Well, we would take either impressions. So if the shoe print was in some sort of substrate or medium like dirt or
mud,
snow or mud, anything like that. Yep. Then we can do what's called either dental stone or sometimes plaster of Paris, but it's essentially something, it's just a mix that hardens over the impression. And then you can take that away from the scene and send it to the lab. And then the lab can analyze, like you said, size and tread pattern. And they look at the outsole, things like that. Whereas if it is, say, in blood or something that, you know, wouldn't have any sort of texture to it, then we would photograph it in certain ways, use chemicals maybe, do lifts like we did for reference, but you could lift impressions once you had a potential shoe at, say, someone's home.
Hmm. So what does the state's shoe print database look like right now?
From what I understand, the database is, they've been taking, and this is nationally as well, there is a database that is, you take a lot of impressions. So like we, like during our partnership, and Danielle can talk about how they lifted these prints, but you would take prints, photograph the shoe that they came from, and then all of those are uploaded into one sort of shared space, and anyone in the country or all over the state can access all the same images, and you can look at dropdowns for, as I said, boots or tennis shoes or anything like that. So you can choose where you want to specify, and then the database can sort of take you in the right direction and exclude things. So you're not looking at thousands. You might be looking at, you know, 100, and then you can further specify, look through all the images, and hopefully find something that's close to you, the shoe that you're hoping to find.
Danielle, can you talk about the work that you're doing and these impressions?
Yeah, so on our end, we hosted like a footwear impression clinic per se, and we invited students to come in, students and staff, to come and get their shoe impression. So what we did was we had them step on an ink pad and then step onto paper, and that showed us their shoe, the outsole they call it. And then we had them take their shoe off, and we took photos of every view of the shoe, including top, bottom, side, and as well as the tag information. So model number, size, make, model, all that kind of stuff. And then we uploaded it into the database, and then now it can get used.
And these shoes, they could be this year's model of a Nike, or they could be a loafer from 2 decades ago. Is that right?
Yeah, we invited people to bring their more unique shoes, per se. So not the the daily sneakers, but we encouraged a lot of like boots, dress shoes, those kind of things that aren't as common that they might not have in the database already. And we did get quite a variety of shoes. It was pretty cool to see.
What got you interested in forensic investigation in the first place?
So growing up, I played volleyball, so long drives to tournaments all the time. And my dad and I would always listen to crime podcasts. So he is really the one who got me into it.
Oh, wow. Jana Marie, the forensic investigation program at Platteville, it's really unique in Wisconsin and even in the country. What do students learn when they come through this program?
The program at UW-Platteville actually was the first in Wisconsin to have a bachelor's in forensic science, and it continues to be the largest program. We actually are at the very end of applying for what's called FEPAC, the Forensic Education Programs Accreditation Committee. That is through the American Academy of Forensic Sciences. So that is... Essentially, they audit us. They would audit a program, and they would do quality control. They would make sure that we are teaching things that students would need when they go out into careers, like physics and chemistry and biology, in addition to all the forensics that they are learning. So we are held account. Barring catastrophe, we will be held accountable starting next year to a national standard, which is there's only four FEPAC accredited. We would be one of four in the Midwest, the Upper Midwest, or the Great Lakes region. So that is very unique to Platteville. And we have a lot of hands-on learning here. So we have, I'm currently sitting in actually the crime scene house, which is called the Fish House. And it was built in the 2010s, but it was specifically built for our program. So there's sensors in the walls, there's cameras that we can, there's, you know, mirrors that you can, that you don't have to be present when the students are doing scene work. You can be in the other room, but watching without having to disturb them and, you know, throw them off. So that's, the house is built specifically for us, and it's out by the farmland by the swine center and it's called Pioneer Farm. So not only do we have a house here that we do crime scenes, how you would document those scenes, how you would interpret those scenes, but we also have land that is used for taphonomic research, which is decomposition studies, things like that. So if you're going to go into death investigation, you need to know how decomposition works, what's normal, because you need to know what's normal so that you know what's not normal. So, but a law enforcement as well, or anyone being going into work with CSI, anyone going out to a scene is going to need an understanding of how you will come across a death scene, and you need to know what is appropriate for that scene. So we have land where we are right next to the swine center. So they provide us with pigs as well. So we have those kinds of studies. And that is, we are the only one in Wisconsin to have taphonomic land to do studies like that.
And now that your program has this partnership with the Wisconsin State Crime Lab to get students involved in providing new shoe print impressions for the state database, what kind of gap is that filling?
The more information, the more data points that we have, the better we are going to be at our decision making, and the more informed we'll be when I don't want to say catching criminals, but interpreting scenes that we may be looking for perpetrators. And that helps the victims. It helps the families of victims. It fills that potential need of, as you said, it could be loafers from the 80s, or it could be last year's sneakers, anything like that. They're just like anything else. New things are coming out every year, almost, I was going to say every month, but every year, we've got new shoes coming out, and, you know, that there's, it's just constantly producing new patterns that we need to keep up with. We need to be current with, because we can't let our knowledge slide or lapse, because then we miss things.
We are talking with UW-Platteville Professor Jana Marie Truesdell and Danielle Beyer, a student at UW-Platteville and president of the Forensic Investigation Club there. And we're looking at shoe prints and crime solving with Jana Marie, who is a forensic anthropologist. Danielle, you know, we drummed up this statistic, more than 22 billion pairs of shoes that are produced worldwide each year. That is a ton of shoes. So yeah. How do forensic experts and rising forensic experts like yourself decide what kind of shoe prints are most important to document for the state database?
So when we were at the lab, she kind of told us to think about what pair of shoes you would wear while committing a crime, which sounds terrible, but it kind of helped put into perspective, like, you're probably not going to show up in heels. So those probably aren't very good to, you know, take your time to do the impression of, but more like everyday shoes and that kind of stuff. And with so many pairs being produced each year, the outsoles of each make and model are all the same. So you can get rid of like any colors, like none of that stuff matters. So that does limit it down a lot, like when you are looking for different shoes.
Jana Marie, are there different techniques for gathering these prints? You know, you've talked about these powder-based impressions or standing on ink, but there's also, I understand, this new 3D scanner approach.
I love 3D scanning. I will use 3D scanning for anything you will let me. And Daniel's mentioned it a few times. The workshop that we did, or the clinic, was we had the ink impressions on the one side for the database, just to get the quota for that. But then we also had the dental stone, and we had some silicone and the different methods, the sort of older techniques. And then we had a 3D station. So the technology with the 3D scanners has come along, and it's coming along so rapidly that we now have, you know, small, very portable handheld scanners. Some of them the size of, you know, an iron. They're very small. They're very easy to use. And you can get every single nook and cranny of whatever it is you're scanning, just depending on how long you have to do it. But you can... It's completely non-invasive. You are not destroying or interrupting any patterns. You're not leaving any powders. You're not disturbing the shoe in any way. You're just scanning it with light. So it's completely non-destructive. It then feeds into a software, and it's extremely, extremely detailed, like down to the millimeter. And you can then 3D print it if you'd like. So you can just keep the data and use it as a representation. You can show that in court. You can just look at it on the screen, and it's movable, so you can move it around in space and see the different shadows. And you can also, one of the benefits there also is that you can change views. So if you wanted to see it in black and white, if you wanted to see it in, you just wanted to see the mesh, you just wanted to see different, you can look at it in different ways, which obviously you can't do just with a physical one. So you could either keep it on screen, or you could choose to 3D print it, and then it would be just like having the shoe itself.
Wow, so versatile. As I hear this, Danielle, it sounds like there is so much emerging technology. There are so many ways to help in this process. And, you know, being president of the Forensic Investigation Club at Platteville, I imagine you're in the thick of it. What is the role of the club, and what does the club do?
Yeah, so our club, we focus on kind of broadening the awareness of forensic science, like around our campus. Our club is open to anyone and everyone, so you don't have to be a forensic major. And then we kind of go into different like subsections of forensics per se. So sometimes we focus on maybe like the more law enforcement side and kind of in relation to that, or we'll do more lab-based activities like fingerprinting, evidence packaging, all that kind of stuff, just to get everyone kind of immersed in the different fields to kind of see what they want to do later on.
What might you want to do?
I am not completely sure. I am interested in so many things. I'm kind of between pathology and toxicology at the moment.
And what does the future hold for career prospects? Are you optimistic, Daniel?
I think I am very optimistic about that, just because of all the new technologies coming out and everything related to that. It's opening up a lot of new windows for people to kind of get into those fields and gain that experience and opportunities.
But I wonder, Jana Marie, is AI changing the game for forensic investigators? What do you see on the horizon?
It is certainly becoming much more prevalent than it was in it, just like anywhere else. But it sort of is, it's good for the pattern matching disciplines. They are notoriously under-researched. There's just not as many studies done on them as other things. And so incorporating AI much in the way that, we already do that with fingerprints, right? But if you think of, you go to a physician and you get a lung scan and AI is going to be used to find nodules or something like that. So you wouldn't just trust the scan or the AI. You would then have your physician look at it and check it and would be able to tell you the results, and they would see if there was maybe a mistake or maybe, oh, this was cloudy here, so that doesn't really, that's not representative. So we would incorporate it, and it could help us make much faster matches. So it's time saving, and it cuts down on error a lot of times. But you still do need that practitioner to make sure that what you're seeing is correct. It's not, for whatever reason, there's just some sort of
anomaly,
mistake or anomaly, or exactly. So you are still going to need experienced, educated practitioners to quality assure and check that that is correct. But on the front end, it really can help save a lot of time, and it can pick up on things that sometimes, you know, the naked eye or a practitioner might not.
Well, let's say that a detective gets a hit on, you know, a positive hit on the shoe print database. How successful are they then in order to solve a crime? Like, how big of a deal would a positive match be in footwear?
Sometimes, depending on how much evidence or what your scene is like, sometimes that may be maybe the only thing that you have. So not everyone thinks that if you've been in a place that you must have left a fingerprint, but not sometimes you don't. Either you just don't leave it yourself, or you're wearing gloves or what have you. You, again, might not bleed, so there might not be DNA anywhere. So sometimes maybe an shoe impression or a tool mark impression is what you have. So it's very, sometimes it can be the thing that cracks the case.
Wow. Well, Jana Marie and Danielle, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate it.
That was Jana Marie Truesdell, Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice and Forensic Investigation at UW-Platteville, and sophomore Danielle Beyer, President of the Forensic Investigation Club for Students on Campus. We've been talking about shoe prints and crime solving and a new partnership between UW-Platteville and the Wisconsin State Crime Lab for students to provide ink impressions and 3D scanned reference prints for the state database. Thank you.